Okay, welcome. You made it to Tuesday morning. We're into the breakouts for the remainder of the week, which I know is the exciting stuff. This session is Transform Yourself and Build Your IT Cloud Career Path. I'm Scott Woodgate. Thanks for getting up early in the morning, not partying too hard last night, maybe that's tonight, and being here. Good stuff. This is not a 400-level PowerShell coding session. We have those. This is a session where we're going to provide you a framework for thinking about transitioning your skill sets to the cloud. We're also going to have some of your own peers, as we'll talk to in a minute, up on stage. And there will be an opportunity for you to have Q&A with the panel. So as you're thinking through this, if you have some burning questions, store them in your brain. And as we get later in the session, we'll give you an opportunity to talk that through. Having said that, just to wake everybody up, I wanted to kick off with an introductory video from IDC. So let's play the video.
IDC believes that while IT employment worldwide will grow about 4% every year from 2015 to 2020, cloud-related positions will grow at more than three times that rate. By 2020, more than one in three IT positions will be cloud-related. This creates an opportunity for IT professionals to become cloud professionals. Cloud computing will change and reprioritize the skills required throughout the IT organization. Some IT professionals will need the ability to design and orchestrate a full stack of services to support rapid deployment of new applications and services. DevOps management will change and reprioritize some of the skills required in the IT organization. Traditional roles such as system and network administrators, architects, security analysts, and even database administrators will need to evolve to ensure data and architectural integrity, infrastructure resilience, and security are not challenged from new and dispersed threats.
All right, so I'm going to spend absolutely no time telling you why the cloud's good for you. And the truth is, as I talked to many of you in the audience over the conference this week and over the last many months, it isn't why the cloud is good for me that is holding people back. It's how do I get there? What do I do prescriptively? It's overwhelming. My day job is something, and I need to move to a new direction, or I need to expand what I'm doing. Like, how do I programmatically do that? I'm a busy person. Help me with the resources to enable me to do that. Give me some practical guidance. That's what we're going to focus on this session today, so that you can capture some of those jobs that are becoming available over the course of the next 5 years and that accelerated rate. With that, I did want to get a handle on where people are in their journey. So I'd love to see how awake you are. Raise your hands if you could read the question. And if not, I'll read it for everybody else. If your company's doing anything in the public cloud, yeah, a bunch of people's companies are doing things in the public cloud. Now let's take that the next level. What if your role, how much of you, your role today involves doing something in the public cloud? Yep, a number of folks. That's good. And let's go the whole way. How many people are all the way through? How many people, 100% of everything you do is in the public cloud? Yeah, there's a couple, but very, very few. And so each of us, companies are clearly rapidly adopting the public cloud for all the value reasons I won't go into today. Each of you are working with the public cloud, which is great, and yet many of you are at different phases in terms of the adoption of public cloud, as many start with pilot projects, maybe some of the simpler workloads like IaaS, and then move over to platform as a service and the like. And that's fairly typical of the transitions. So thanks for that. It gives us a good handle on where you're at. So with that, the rest of the talk is going to be really focused on these four questions. And as I was thinking about it, I'm like, you know, why am I the right person to talk to you about these four questions? As a person, I've been a Microsoft guy for 16 years. I've been at the same company for 16 years. So I haven't done a lot of transitions in a company sense. Having said that, at Microsoft, I've been very privileged to move across many, frankly, multi-billion dollar businesses at a every 2 year rate. And so I started sometimes in a startup business and went over to Windows and then over to Server Tools and, you know, did all the things you can do inside Microsoft. And every 2 years or so, I was faced with this conundrum of, I just learned a tremendous amount of proprietary, sometimes deep technical information that was really important to get me to where I was. And I was rewarded for that. But my next job, I had a choice. I could either kind of keep going deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper in that area, which actually was kind of satisfying because I was an expert and I wanted to grow my expertise, or I can take a step out of that and say, hey, I can grow in this area. I will not know what I'm doing. That's actually really scary in the first few weeks, first few months, but this will broaden my skill set. And there's always a balance between how much time you spend going down deeper and deeper and deeper in a single area versus how much time you build on what you have. You know, you're not going to become a different person, but then translate and add a new set of skills to it. And in that balance really defines your career. Cool. So with that, let's go ahead and goes without saying that we will actually provide you some resources to help you, which is one of the areas that my team has been working on. My team actually runs a number of these resources, which we will talk to through the course of the day. So with that, in a minute, I'm going to invite up on stage the panel, who are not paid actors, not professional spokespeople, but actually IT professionals just like yourselves, whom we have recruited for this talk. You saw them in the keynote, and just to introduce them, we have a second video treatment. This is not the same one you saw in the keynote, but just to introduce our panel, let's run this video, and then we'll get them up on stage.
When the cloud was first starting, well, there was a lot of hesitation. How is it going to work?
Some felt nervous about it. I mean, why do you need three network engineers here if somebody else is maintaining these servers?
You have some system which is 20, 30 years old. How would it incorporate or seamlessly fit into the current working infrastructure within your organization? Before the cloud, we were firefighting and we're trying to work with all different systems and different vendors. And then we adopted the cloud and it made us more kind of efficient.
With the cloud, I'm able to deliver solutions for my clients much faster than I would have on a more traditional environment. We have the flexibility of actually being able to maintain that same type of environment on virtually any device. And that's such an added benefit.
I can't imagine going back to the server world. It's time to move them on and let someone else take care of them. I recognize that by housing it somewhere else, it opens up all these possibilities.
Working in the cloud has reduced my 12-hour shifts down to normal 8 to 5. The cloud has basically given me back my life. I don't have to come in on the weekends or work, you know, 12 hours to bring something back up again because it's not physically on premise. It's actually in the cloud.
It's important to have service in the cloud. Allows you to be flexible in your data, be able to access it universally through multiple mobile devices, not only your typical desktop and laptop.
Well, since we moved to the cloud, I've noticed that my role has changed from being more of a maintenance and support to more of a business consultancy type of role.
Kind of changed the way I interacted with the IT department. And before my cloud role came along, I was the IT maintenance guy. Now I'm basically the business analyst or the cloud architect. Things have gotten a lot smoother. Less security to worry about, less bandwidth issues. That whole ordering process of POs, getting approvals is all gone. Now we're actually contributing to the well-being of the line of business. So we're viewed much differently.
It allowed for new positions to open up. You didn't get bogged down by the mundane work. You got to actually do newer things.
It makes me feel that I'm empowered. It makes me feel that I have more control of my kind of destiny within my organization.
It's provided us with more time to focus on innovation. Instead of actually maintaining an environment, it makes you stand apart.
Learn what's needed to do it. It's not cumbersome or complex. So really easy to adapt the cloud technology.
We now have the ability to work anywhere we want, which means we can grow any way we want. And that's pretty fantastic.
Cool. So with that, I am delighted to announce on stage our panel of Nathan, Cheryl, Gagan, and I'll get to Rick in a minute. So folks, do you mind coming up? Give them a hand, guys. And as I said, I'm not sure how many times these folks have been in front of audiences this large, and public speaking is not a specialty. They're one of you, which is great, except this character. Rick is a Microsoft guy who has spent a tremendous amount of time working with each of you over a course of many years. He also describes himself on Twitter, I think, as a server hugger?
I'm a server hugger and cloud aficionado.
There you go. Exactly. So with
I've never heard that one.
Yeah, like that. With that, I'm going to start with Gagan. Can you please introduce yourself to the crowd and tell them a little bit about your role and how long you've been working in cloud?
Yeah, sure. Good morning, everybody. My name is Gagan. I'm an IT manager for architecture design firm. I've been working in the cloud for about 2 to 3 years now.
Very cool. Kay. Cheryl.
Hi, guys. My name is Cheryl van Heiningen. I'm from the Netherlands. I work as a lead solution architect, and I'm part of a multi-client Office 365 SharePoint.net team.
Wonderful.
My name is, good morning, my name is Nathan Cotting. I'm a cloud integrator, work for a very large international architectural engineering and construction firm, and I've been working in the cloud for about 5 or 6 years now, started with BPOS and some other products in Azure now in the last probably 2 years or so.
Very good. Thanks, Nathan. Go ahead, Rick.
25-year-ish experience in the IT industry, starting as the guy that jiggled the cable to get the printer to work, and then evolved through a variety of different roles, managing systems, managing servers, consulting, coaching, mentoring, and then got a job at Microsoft and started talking about our products and solutions. And now I work on the Azure Compute team as one of the guys and engineers that actually goes and builds new virtual machine and compute offerings that you guys use as N-series, H-series type machines.
He's the alphabet soup, the N guy.
You got it.
Cool. Well, great to have you guys here. I'll get back to the panel in a minute. I just got to clear a couple more things. Actually, I'm going to get Rick in initially. So one of the things that we thought about here was, as we think of all the advice that we'll give you, and we'll give you a lot of advice, are there 3, 4, or 5 takeaways that are probably more important than the rest in terms of how you would approach embracing the cloud? And these are things you need to change, sometimes stylistically, sometimes technical learnings and the like. And so with that, I'm going to hand over to Rick, actually, to take you through this list of 5 potential opportunities to change as you embrace cloud.
This is something I get asked all the time, and people ask me about what are the starting points. I came in early talking to a couple of you that were inside the room, and they're like, you know, how do I get started and what do I actually do? So these are some of my instant buckets that I think of when I start thinking about transitioning and starting to work in the cloud environment. The very first one is something that potentially you've been trained to resist because you already have a very busy workload as it is. New technologies, new things coming into your environment means more change that you're going to have to deal with and manage ongoing. You might be more of a hesitant, hang on, let's wait and figure this out kind of approach to kind of mitigate your workload. But using cloud technologies is something that if you start to use, start to try, figure them out, you can start to change your mindset with regards to how you can use them as another tool inside of your toolbox, and also start to become part of that more active conversation inside your companies about using those cloud technologies. So number one, change your mindset and also embed yourself into that business process of what's going on, looking at using some of these new technologies as projects come up. This is a hard one for me because I've been mostly on the Windows side of the world. Literally, if you cut me, I bleed blue from the amount of Microsoft stuff that I've been using over the years. I made my investment in Microsoft technologies a long time ago. But I also kept up to date with technologies as they're evolving and started working with Linux technologies throughout the career that I've had. And I actually now work on the Linux team within Azure and have now very much embraced and are using Linux inside of our environment. out of the machines that are running inside of Azure, over 33% of them are actually running Linux as opposed to Windows inside of our cloud technologies right now inside of Azure, and more deployed every single day. Linux, if you don't do it now, absolutely understand and learn where it is so you can leverage it.
Can I add some more color on that?
Sure.
Because as a Windows guy, all this Linux stuff is the same, right? There's a management experience, there's a set of services, but on the other hand, there's a lot of new learning. But there's technologies we now have that are cross-platform that make that easier for me as a Windows guy to actually be relevant and use Linux.
Absolutely. One of the best things that just happened in the last month or so has been the fact that we've open sourced PowerShell as an example. Mm-hmm. If you're comfortable or familiar with PowerShell, you actually now can go and have a version of it that's able to go and run on top of your Mac, run on top of your Linux box, and you can go and manage at scale using PowerShell against that. But at the same time, it's also scripting technologies. So mm-hmm. your skills in one area can translate over if you learn those scripting technologies on the Linux side, for sure. Plus, all of our monitoring and management solutions all give first-class citizen status to Linux and Windows. So it's the same tools you're going to be using as well to manage both.
Great.
Number three is command line tools. It's a good kind of transition, I guess, with this. Mm-hmm. Not just the command line tools that you're traditionally working with. In Azure, we use a technology called Azure Resource Manager templates, or ARM templates. This literally is the embodiment of infrastructure as code. You define your infrastructure, 3 web servers in the front, 2 database in the back end, high availability, separate networks, firewall rules between them. You can define that inside of some code that allows you to do a very fast automated deploy, and then if you need to tweak it or change it, change the code, check it back in, redeploy again, and off it goes. So it's definitely something to take a look at beyond simply doing a manual script to something, the old way of doing things, just using scripting technologies. That also gets you the ability to go off and do scale. Like infrastructure as code, you heard the term DevOps. You've heard the term DevOps a number of times throughout the last couple of years almost. It's been coming more and more to the forefront. I was always something that stayed kind of out of the DevOps cycle because I focused just on servers. I focused just on desktop infrastructure, help desk infrastructure, that sort of stuff. But getting involved inside the development cycle and learning these skills definitely helped me in understanding how I can become more valuable to those cloud architects and to those dev guys and dev gals that are designing these solutions, because I could talk their language and I could translate their requirements from high availability, security, and resource access into infrastructure pieces, and then encode that or bring that back into that conversation of the development cycle. As things change, factor it back in again. And so the concept of DevOps is more of a philosophy, practice, and a people thing that is enabled by tools. I'll talk more about that coming up in just a little bit, but get yourself involved in the dev cycle process if it's not your primary responsibility right now. And lastly, some things that I do as well, spend time using and working. I always say, if you don't have it right now, go off and sign up for a trial. Use some of the tools that Scott will be sharing a little bit later on for some added benefits that are fantastic. I'm so glad we have these. And start using them. But I'll also challenge you, don't just use ours. You should also be familiar with how things work in other platforms as well. Because it's cloud technologies, you are going to be designing solutions that have to work across all those different ones, but you're going to have an easier time getting your foot started using ours with our technologies, because a lot of the stuff you do on-premises, you'll be able to do inside of a cloud environment with similar management tools, so a lot of your skills will transition over. That's
very
about
cool.
It for now. We'll go into some more depth a little bit later on.
Thanks, Rick. Actually, I have a question for the audience just to see if you're still awake out there, and it relates to the first point on this. For those of you who are working on public cloud technology, how many of you did the business come and say, hey, we need to do this cloud stuff, and as IT you went and implemented it for the business, so the business was leading? Yep, a number of you? Yep, quite a few actually. And then how many IT was leading? You guys were like, oh, we gotta do this cloud stuff. Yeah, so almost a 50-50 split between those two different models. And it's one of the reasons why that first one is really important. You really wanna be leading to the business as much as possible. And the more that you can be skilled up in this area and coming to the business with the new innovative work that we're doing, the better off you're going to be in terms of landing the solutions that fit the training and the skills that you have against the business needs as opposed to whatever technology choice the business may have heard of on the market. Cool. So with that, I am going to invite on stage Teresa. Teresa Conte works on my team. She's the owner of a number of these tools to help you navigate your career. And she's going to talk to some skills, and then we'll ask some questions of the panel.
Wonderful.
Welcome, Teresa.
Thanks, Scott. Cool. So, as you're transitioning to your cloud role, and many of you have already started that transition, you're asking yourselves, what are the new skills you need to learn? We've worked with industry experts to determine what are those new skills you need to learn, what are the cloud roles, and the primary skills, secondary skills that you're going to need to evolve to in a cloud role. All of you have skills because you're in IT, but those skills will change and transition to something new as you're using new tools, new processes in a cloud role. Soft skills. You all have soft skills, but as you move to a cloud role, soft skills become even more important. Business context. In order for IT to have a bigger value within your company, you need to understand the business strategy, the context of how you are helping the business to grow. Communication. In a traditional on-prem role, you may have been fixing things all the time. That changes because as you move to a cloud role, you are collaborating with the lines of businesses in your corporation to implement cloud services. So you're going to have to increase your communication skills as you execute within those lines of businesses. Creativity and critical thinking. The way you problem solve in a cloud role is very different from an on-prem role. You are going to need to learn new ways of critical thinking, problem solving in your cloud role. Vendor management. Depending on what cloud role you choose or what cloud role you're evolving to, you may need to be managing your SaaS providers, your cloud service providers. And in order to do that, you need to build relationships with them. So these are the soft skills you're going to need in your cloud role. There are also technical skills you need. You all recognize these technical skills, but these two also change and evolve as you move to a cloud role. But before we go into the details of what changes in these skills within a cloud role, let's understand what's been important to your peers.
Cool. Thanks, Teresa. And actually, before we go to the panel, I just wanted to refer to the fact that the work that Teresa is pointing, you probably wondering, like, where did we come up with this list? And you referred to industry experts.
Industry experts, yes.
Adding more detail in that, I think we can say this, right? We work with Gartner Consulting to give us this view. We work with internal engineering teams. We work with customer and MVP validation to build this framework, which will become important when we work through the tool. So with that, I wanted to throw out some soft skill questions to our panel. So I guess I'll start with Nathan. So Nathan, talk to us about soft skills. Can you identify one of those that was important as you transitioned to cloud?
A combination of, I believe, communication and vendor management was interpersonal skills. You really have to, an entrepreneurship, I guess, to some extent as well, because you're leaving your traditional kind of pigeonholed IT job, and now you're becoming kind of the guy that wears multiple hats, and you have to be able to relate with senior management. You have to relate, be able to relate to vendors and basically the business lines so that you can get all them together on the same page and move forward rather than just, you know, here's your assigned task and go do it. So interpersonal skills is something you definitely have to work on and improve and not be afraid to, deal with, you know, learn how to deal with all different types of companies and vendors.
Very good. And what about yourself, Cheryl, in the soft skills category?
I agree fully with Nathan. It used to be so that in the more traditional role I had, there was a lot of emphasis on keeping the systems operational, and a lot of time was spent on remedial tasks. And I now have more time to spend with my customers to really listen to them and to really communicate and do the vendor management and communicate on a different level, because most of the services are managed, so you don't have to worry about them being operational. And I really like that because now I can spend more time really helping my customer move forward. Uh-huh. Because that's what, at least that my goal is, to really help them out and to really help them innovate to take the next step. So it's, it really helped me to transform from a more traditional IT person, the pigeonhole you called it, to more of a business consultant. And you know, that's, I think that's the future for you being in an IT career that's focused primarily on cloud.
Very cool. So there's just a couple of the soft skills more on the interpersonal side, and then thinking more like a business consultant, less operational in Cheryl's context.
Yep.
Let's talk about tech skills. Gagan, what did you value most in terms of technical skills and learnings?
What you have here for technical skills, they're all vital pretty much, but for me, to continue expanding your technical chops, I focused on infrastructure and DevOps. Here's why, because it was always an environment that was never a dull moment as well. It was always changing, always evolving. You get to work on a lot of great things, and you get paid to break things first before hopefully your clients get access to it, because you want to make sure it's obviously 99.9% reliable, but that's not always the case. So you got to go back to the drawing board, you got to re-engineer, you got to work with your core development teams, your QA, your product, your program management. Nowadays, we're post of that waterfall adage. We're more agile, we're more driven, Scrum more smaller, even though we're working enterprise level software. Things have to be shipped faster, and sometimes they don't even get tested thoroughly. But with these technical skills, you have to be more well-rounded in your role. It's not just, oh, you're the IT expert, you may know certain things, and then you move the envelope or the baton to the next person. You have to kind of always circulate around the technical people as well as the product people. And at the same time, you're not only improving your tech skills, but you're also improving your business acumen, because later on, you're gonna end up being maybe a CTO one day, or CEO, or you know, somewhere along the line. So you may not, like my peer said, don't be pigeonholed into your role, but be well-rounded is what I wanted here to say.
Very cool. Okay, DevOps infrastructure, and then more on those soft skills are consistent across each of you. Rick, if you had to choose to add some value on either of these categories, what would you land on?
I'm going to go back to the soft skill side.
Okay.
By nature, a lot of us are troubleshooters, fixing things, mm-hmm. spend a lot of time to fix them. A lot of us tend to kind of just stay within our own space, our own sphere, as opposed to going out and talking to others. I'm no different than that category. I also very much am an introvert for the way that I go off and I work and attack things and work different programs. But it also allows me to go off and definitely work on a lot of different teams and put myself out of my comfort zone to make it so I have more of an extroverted, connected and working with other people. Communication generally also helps as well, to be able to speak well. But for that, I tend to challenge myself to go off and talk publicly and do things like this, and I got a role at Microsoft talking, so that helped an awful lot. But being able to simply do the translation of what was being said from the way that was the information was being presented in the particular meeting or in the team environment, translating that to a way that other folks can then go and understand and use inside of their own sphere. DevOps, as an example, being able to translate the terms and the principles, that sort of stuff, came out to be very handy as well. So tech skills we got. Soft skills is an area that most people tend to have to prop up and spend some more time on to invest in.
Cool. Great. And so there were some examples of soft and tech skills, but Teresa, can we make this real and maybe an example role of somebody?
Absolutely. So as Scott mentioned, we work with Gartner Consulting to come up with this list of skills. These skills will vary based on the cloud role that you choose. Some will be primary skills you need to learn, while others will be secondary skills. So, how does this work? So I'm gonna go through an example. We have a systems admin role, so typical on-prem role. You can see here the technical skills the soft skills, functional skills that one would traditionally have in this role. A potential career path for a systems admin is to move to a cloud administrator role. Here you can see the skills recommended for the cloud admin role. You have the technical skills. You see some that are the same, but they are leveraging the knowledge you have, but that skill will change as you move to a cloud role because you'll be doing things differently for infrastructure. You'll be using different tools. You also have new skills that are being added as you move to the cloud role. So in this scenario, you have two new skills. You have application management and device management. So those are two new skills you'll need to learn if you take this career path. Soft skills. There are soft skills similar, but some become even more important. They become your primary skills. Here, communications becomes a primary skill as you need to orchestrate the cloud services across the different lines of businesses. And then also customer service and support becomes a primary skill. So this is an example of a career path, how your on-prem skills transition to new skills as you move to a cloud role. So this is a great example. The next question is, okay, how do I figure out my cloud role? What is my cloud role career path? What are the skills that I need? We've put together resources to help you determine what is your career path. So we have the IT Pro Career Center, which helps map your career path and determine those new skills. And then we have a second free program called IT Pro Cloud Essentials, which gives you the free cloud services, support, and education to get you started. So I'm going to walk you through these two free services. So IT Pro Career Center. It sucks getting old. I need to put my glasses to see this. I can see that, but and I can't see that. So when you register for the IT Pro Career Center, you land on this page, which is career mapping. What we ask you is, what is your current on-prem role? We give you a bunch of options to choose from. This is our initial list that we've worked with Gartner, but we will be expanding this list as the months go on. So I'm going to choose systems administrator. So that's my on-prem role. I want to then click career mapping to discover what the two career path recommendations are for me. So here we have two. Cloud administrator is a career path. It's an immediate career path. It's the closest to the skills that I currently have as a systems admin. The second career path is a cloud architect. We call it more of a future role because you're going to need to learn more skills. So let's explore the cloud admin. Here you can see the skills required. We've identified which are the new skills you need, which are primary, and which are secondary that you need to learn. Cloud architect. This is, we call it a future skill because as you can see, there are many more skills you will need to learn in that career path. If you were a systems admin and moving to a cloud architect, you have newer skills to learn. You see which are primary, which are critical to your role, and which are secondary. So I'm going to choose the immediate path, which is the cloud admin. So when I choose the cloud admin, it will take me to the curriculum that I need to follow for this role. So here I have the primary skills and secondary skills. Again, it's identified which are those new skills you need to learn in this role. And as you expand these, it will list the courses that you need to take to begin learning these skills. So once you've completed some of these courses, you will want to start practicing. The best way to learn is getting your hands dirty and start using the technology. So we've provided a free resource to help you get started with Azure. So here from the Career Center, if I go to home, we connect you to the IT Pro Cloud Essentials. Here I click and I go through. Because you've registered for Career Center, you're automatically registered for Cloud Essentials and vice versa. So free cloud services, we provide you free Azure credits, we provide you extended trials for enterprise mobility, for Windows and Office 365. So you have a bunch of extended services, free services to get you started. Education, we have a 3-month free Pluralsight subscription for you with 10 courses that you can take. And also, we provide you with a certification exam voucher discount and also a bunch of other fun stuff. And here, you can cross and go back to Career Center. We also provide you with technical support. You get priority support in the TechNet forums and a free phone support incident. So here you have a bunch of free resources to help get you started with our services. Okay, so let me click. Okay, let's go back. Okay, so now that you have seen the various free services that we have available for you, let's actually go back. One, I think I've missed something. Nope. Okay, so over to Rick, who is going to walk you through the infrastructure skills and all the technical skills so that you understand how these change as you move to a cloud role.
Rick? Thanks. I like having concrete examples, so I'm going to show you some concrete examples. But I want to call out just on that last resource that you guys have at IT Pro Cloud Essentials, $300 of Azure credit over the course of 3 months. That's three times what you get with a regular trial, and it rolls over again. You get, you know, 100 the first month, 100 the second month, 100 the third month. That is an awesome resource just by itself, plus all the other stuff that's there. So definitely go sign up and check that out. What changes? Infrastructure, technical skills. Like I mentioned earlier, the concept of going off and you already have existing skills right now working with your on-premises infrastructure, a lot of those things you're doing now directly translate into using them inside of a network environment, inside of a cloud infrastructure. Building subnets, building networks, mapping them out to IP addresses and mapping servers in different roles. All that has there. The difference is you need to be able to think about this for being able to make it reproducible, being able to scale it, and also being able to redeploy again and again in a continuous exact same kind of functional level. Automation is how you're going to go off and breed skill and scale inside of your environment. And so automation using PowerShell, automation if you're on the Linux side using Azure CLI. If you haven't tried Azure CLI as of yet, it's something you're going to want to try out for how you can go off and deploy and interact with the Azure world. An example of opening up a port is something that comes up an awful lot easier. If you're going to do that on-premises based on your firewall-type technology that you're using, it's going to require a certain interface, certain command line, or a certain web interface to go off and manage. Doing that at an automated fashion at scale is different in the Azure world because of the way that we look at firewalls in Azure world. We use what's known as NSGs, or network security groups, where you actually define the overall network structure, the subnets, the ports, the machines talking to machines. It literally is software-defined networking to the nth degree. So it's a little more complex, but once you get your head around that little pivot that it's not to simply open port 80 on this particular switch, it gets to be easier to see how that can now work on a much broader scale across your entire infrastructure that's running inside of Azure. So definitely from an infrastructure perspective, being able to think of things slightly different in a different pivot, but using your existing skills that are already there. From a security and privacy perspective, a lot of this you don't have to worry as much about because the provider, Microsoft in this case, does a lot of the work for you to make sure that we have a lot of the security in place as it is. But a lot of the times you don't have the trust level associated with working with these different services because they're in someone else's environment, someone else's data center and region around the world. And so you need to understand what options happen to be there. One example that you have for this one here, would be being able to implement encryption or being able to use a high security device to be able to store your encryption keys on premises, having to have to spec out and manage and work with one of those secure cages that are then audited by the different security providers to be able to say that that is a secure key store. You don't have to worry about any of that. You literally just go to the web portal and say, click, give me Key Vault, deploy, and it's done inside of my environment. I now have an HSA inside of my Azure subscription that I can now use from an applications environment. So much easier to use because you don't have to worry about speccing, building, deploying, and maintaining at that point in time. Your processes are going to change, much faster to implement, and you can actually start to get a much better and safer secure footprint across the board. Your role in this one here to pivot and change is to go through and to understand how to explain some of these technologies to your different teams so that they can start to use them as well, and then overall start to bring more security inside of your environment when you start using cloud technologies. Architecture-wise, how to be able to bring up solutions without being stuck in your old way of working with things. You know, example as I had earlier was simply having a website that's up and running with a back end and having to worry about defining those different networks. Now you have the ability to go through and to all of a sudden implement automatic load balancing, automatic scaling that can now take effect, being able to make this geo-redundant across different areas in the world if that happens to be what your application needs to be able to work with. It used to be a massive exercise to have to worry about doing that across your own data centers around the world. Now it literally is a matter of choosing deployment options when you go through the initial deploy, architecting and testing it out. Doesn't work? Tear it down, build it back up again, slightly different. Does it work? Nope. Tear it down, build it back up again. Okay, it works this time. Great. Lock that down. That's what I want to do. Architecture definitely is a lot more flexible on this for being able to work. Also jumping out of the fact that you may not need to look at traditional VMs and instead start looking at newer technologies like container services, looking at new microservices architectures as well. DevOps-wise, as I mentioned, it's not just a bunch of tools. People seem to get stuck on the finer points that it's like, oh, I'm using different tools for being able to do DevOps practices. And in reality, it comes down to a change in a mindset of inserting yourself into this feedback loop. I almost like to think of this, if you're not involved in software development, as more of a simple modern operations way of working. To be able to implement something, quickly evaluate if it's working, make some changes, take the feedback, and implement the change, and then continuously going through in this kind of cycle like you would with software development. So great concepts for being able to do that, starting to look at some of those practices. A book recommendation, Phoenix Project. Amazing book. Talks about it in a very concrete way with the manufacturing industry, but how they used and work with DevOps technologies. And then the last chapter talks about the tools they use to implement them, but it's mostly a people process. Application management comes down to, once again, evolving your tools. You're already using a lot of these different management technologies right now, but now simply a matter of using more recent versions or you're starting to use some of them that are now embracing cloud technologies. Another prime example, looking at what we're doing now with the Enterprise Mobility Suite, looking at what we're doing with Intune, looking at what we're doing with SCCM, with how it now has cloud backends and cloud technologies, or even the one we announced yesterday at the keynote, which is OMS, up inside of the cloud environment where it lives entirely inside of Azure, and you can now use those technologies. Simply a matter of evolving and changing the way you look at managing applications. Same thing applies to managing devices as well. It used to be very difficult to have to stand up your infrastructure of having to go off and manage multiple devices, deployment of multiple laptops, deployment of multiple tablets and phones. Now it's much, much simpler because of not having to stand up that infrastructure to support it. Data is something that is very interesting to me. As they like to say, data is the new bacon inside of your environment. Because data is something that is able to expose a lot of insight that you previously didn't have access to be able to query in a timely fashion and come out with information that's useful for being able to make decisions. And so from a data perspective, you can go off and start to work with very large, massive databases and massive computational power as you want to and as you need to inside of a cloud environment, spin them back down again when you don't need them, you're no longer paying for that compute time. Spin them back up again when you need them, run your reports, run your stuff, comes back down again. But now you also don't have to move any of that data around because it lives in the cloud. You can now render it and look at it inside of the cloud very, very fast as well from an analytics perspective. And then lastly, from a management perspective on data side of things, I can't remember how the last time that I had to worry about geo-replication of databases. Now that I use cloud technologies, because You'd no longer have to manage the underlying services if you don't want to. You can now simply worry about the data layer and worry about where that data is available with things like SQL on Azure to be able to go off and to replicate across multiple areas and also have high availability. And then you choose your performance levels you want to have too. Scale them up, scale them down. Data management, one example I'll give before I just pass this over. A friend of mine was doing a database load-in that regularly would take over a weekend to be able to load in all that data. And then all of a sudden he said, I'm using this in the cloud anyway. He was using a very small P1 or P2 subscription for SQL Azure. And then he said, this could take less time if I simply upped my P1 to a P11, did the database input in less than 2-3 hours, and then gear back down to a D1, P1 again to be able to go off and let it sit there and percolate for the rest of the time you needed to. You can't do that if you're on premises. You make that investment and then you're done with it. Cloud, you can dial it up and dial it down. And that's my quick review of tech skills that I found helpful.
That's a good one. Actually, one that you shared with me that I didn't know whether I heard as well highlighted, so I'm going to just take a stick and stab at it. And we had a good discussion yesterday, I think it was, although I was working on keynote stuff yesterday, so I'm not sure, around changing your mental model from managing a single server to managing multiple servers. And I think the discussion was around in the past, and I know this is simplifying it because you know, many things network today, but in the past I was focused on how could I fix that single server if it broke? And I'd go very deep on the single server, what patches do I installed, what errors are the event viewer. I could spend hours trying to figure out what the problems are. Anyone has this, like it's your job, right? What the problems are in that single server to go resolve that single server. And that was the mindset that I had to get to the 99s. In the cloud world, where I've scripted everything and I'm using these ARM templates and I've automated, a server is a commodity that I can throw away in a second flat. And so the amount of time that I invest in troubleshooting a single instance versus getting rid of the single instance and replacing it with a new instance in known good state, don't spend as much time troubleshooting the single instance. Don't get me wrong, there's still troubleshooting. You still need the overall system to work together. But your mindset changes from being highly focused on within a single machine to, oh, I can go ahead and replace that probably far more quickly than I could resolve it, of course, assuming that the error isn't in the scripting for the deployment. So I thought that was a really interesting way of thinking about changing your mindset.
A nice summary in that one there is a friend of mine, Jeffrey Snover, likes to say, treating your servers like cattle and not treating them like pets as individual little special snowflakes. And you're able to do that if you have more of a infrastructure as code mindset for being able to troubleshoot it. Definitely, very much so.
Perfect, that's cool. And just a couple on Teresa. The IT Pro Cloud Essentials program, absolutely sign up, it's available today. The Azure credits are not currently available today. Just being super transparent with you guys, anytime you offer something that has a lot of value, costs us a bunch of money to give you $300 of Azure per month, there can be some fraud associated with that. And so, the system is currently off in terms of enabling your Azure subscriptions. Mark on my team, who sits over there, is working very hard to turn it back on. Every time we've turned it on in the last week, unfortunately, some fraudulent people have taken the subscriptions away from your hands. So we're working on fixing our rules in the back end to ensure that the right people get access to this. So stay tuned. We hope to get there by the end of the week. In terms of getting the Azure credit that it's on, and if not, it'll be very early next week. So thanks for your patience as we do that. Cool. So I wanted to continue before I get to the panel. I promise I will, and we're going to have plenty of time for conversations. But I wanted to continue in just a couple more resource areas, because one of the feedbacks, frankly, it's not one of the feedbacks that I get from all of you. Of course I do that. But one of the challenges even I have as a Microsoft employee with 16 years of experience in the company and a whole lot of it in the server and tool space is, what did we just release? What is it? How do I use it? And in the cloud, we're just forever coming up with new capabilities on a week-by-week-by-week basis, which makes it really, really hard to stay current. And you know what I learned 6 months ago is the foundation for what I need to know, but I have to refresh it on a continual basis. And so one of the things that we've done to help you with that, while also recognizing that your time is super precious and you may not have an hour and another hour and another hour to listen to lots of videos, sometimes you do, but on a week-by-week basis you may not, is create a Microsoft-wide program for IT professionals called Microsoft Mechanics. Who subscribes to Microsoft Mechanics? Okay, and that's good. So I'm telling a few people things that you don't know. So these are 10 minutes, sometimes a little longer, as you can see, particularly in Ignite Week, but we try and make them 10-minute video segments. There are playlists here for Azure, for Server, for Office 365, so if you're in a specific set of technologies, you can just subscribe to the playlist. And we'll give you roughly weekly content, 10 minutes at a time, which has very high production value and is much less focused on marketing and much more focused on demos with real engineers and telling you what to do. And so if you want an easy way to stay current and get a glimpse of these technologies, obviously hands-on is always the best way to really learn them, do sign up for Mechanics, get on the subscription and get that monthly feed. It's a whole lot easier than having to go out and discover what content is to subscribe to weekly feeds. And as you are on the train or otherwise walking around the place, you can go ahead and find things. So yeah, now here's our Azure feed, and off we go from there. Love YouTube's recommendations on the right. Okay, cool. So with that, the second thing I wanted to highlight in the final of the four resources, IT Pro Career Center, IT Pro Cloud Essentials, Mechanics, was launched yesterday and therefore is brand new. Ever been to a brand new community? It needs people. You're the people. So we have TechNet forums. TechNet forums, we got a lot of feedback from you folks that, well, TechNet forums is great for asking break fix questions. This is broken, how do I fix it? And we'll continue to be used in that format. We'll continue to put our support teams on it. It's just not an ideal forum to collaborate with folks and get guidance, and it certainly isn't modern. And so what we've done here with the Microsoft Tech community, also with Office in this case, is build out a modern infrastructure for social forum where you can go get guidance from peers, engineering, to help you move forward. And we do all the things you'd expect. You can like things. There's embedded videos. It works on mobile. You know, the list goes on. So many of the things that we got feedback on TechNet forums that wasn't great and ideal for have been addressed here. So this is, I'm actually logged in as Teresa. There's a cool Xbox avatar, having been an Xbox in a past life. And you can see her feed. She's obviously heavily interested in readiness resources. So she's actually on the IT resources and training board on the tech community, where she can see new, popular, or unanswered. She also has favorited a number of spaces. There are a number of groups or spaces. We took the opportunity to simplify, and TechNet forums is like 1,000 little, tiny little forums. We've reduced that down to a smaller set of forums so that we can have more people having conversations in that. She's part of a broader set of communities. So I really encourage you to join the Microsoft Tech community. Obviously, there's not a lot of people there today because we're just getting started, but it's a big focus area for us to help you and, frankly, to give you a great forum to share with your peers that's better than what you already had before. TechNet Forums is not going away. It will stay for break-fix conversations. Put break-fix conversations there where you want more guidance and learning and forward-looking things. This is the place to go. Cool, so with that, let's go back to our panel. And somehow, somewhere, I'll find a slide just to frame what we're gonna do. Okay, cool. So I wanted to kick off with three questions, and then I'm gonna open it up to the audience, and we'll have maybe 15 minutes for your questions. So I hope you saved them from the beginning. And I'll start at the left-hand side, as I did before. Gagan, can you talk us about practically getting started in the cloud?
Yeah, sure. So getting started, it was something of, you know, unique for me because it was where do I start? There's a lot of information, like anybody, could be confusing and information overload. So I took a systematic approach and broke things down into smaller chunks and made realistic goals for myself, but not only for my company, and to have a very strong influence in what I do, but also take ownership and pride that we can save a lot of time and effort and have strategic planning into moving into a cloud environment It was costing not only my time and my team's time, but it was costing the company more to not, you know, go into the cloud and take advantage of newer emerging technologies. And like, you know, our product analyst, I mean, here said earlier, so if you don't involve yourself into future upbringings of technology, you're going to be left behind. Your competitors are going to actually kill you, and your products and services are going to, you know, suffice to say, you're going to be downgraded, and then you lose impact on your volatility on products, your ROI, and so forth. So to get started on that, it was a tremendous amount of growth for myself to get to this journey. And it's the future is still, you know, sky's the limit. And so that's what I can give and share with you today.
That makes sense. And in terms of how you got started in the cloud, did you drive it? Did the business drive it?
It was bottom down for me. So I drove a lot of the initiatives. And to one of the questions that we had from yesterday's discussion, well, how did you get buy-in from management? I basically did a couple of presentations and pros and cons. And for me, the pros outweighed the cons that we must do this. We have to take more immediate action to get into cloud, take the necessary tools and guidance and resources that we have available from a lot of the experts in our industries and go from there.
Okay, driven up. Okay, great. And what about yourself, Cheryl? How'd you get started?
Well, for me, it was more of a customer-driven thing because they wanted to know more about cloud. And I started on a personal level as a SharePoint subject matter expert. For everyone who has ever worked with SharePoint or maintained multiple farms, well, you know it can be a pain at times. So I was very keen in getting some help in that area to speed up certain things, the patching, the upgrading, and it was such a hassle. And once my customers started to be curious about cloud, I really dove into it. Started to learn about SharePoint Online and Office 365, and also started to learn about Azure, and especially Azure with the templates. I could spin up a farm in under 20 minutes, and I still have to do the configuration and things like that, but the ease and the time that it saved me, it's so rewarding. I wouldn't want to go back to how it was, but it was more of a customer driven.
More of the customers. Your customers said, "Hey, we're interested in this," and then you had the skills to match it. You could grow from it. Great, Nathan.
Mine was more or less from management, kind of dictating, saying, "Hey, let's do this stuff." And I was the lucky guy who got selected, and I got going that way.
Very cool. So, hey, please go do this in that context. How did you get up to speed?
Back in the day, not as nicely as you guys have done it, I really applaud both Scott and Teresa for creating this wonderful tool that's available now. But, you know, we would attend conferences like this, where there was maybe one cloud session or one cloud topic online. And then I kind of found some guys that were like me that were doing this cloud thing on their own, and we kind of joined a little team and created our own little community. And we try different things, and then we kind of report back, and we help each other, and we all grow as a team and more relationships.
Very cool. And then let's go back to Gagan again. Just an open-ended question. What advice would you give the audience?
My advice is to be selfish, personally, because we work in our careers, you know, day in, day night, working on project milestones and roadmaps, like from quarterly roadmaps to yearly, year over year. So my stance is for you guys and myself and everybody here is take a selfishness stance for your own career and proclaim like a career roadmap for yourselves, because this role is what you are here today may not be down 20 years from now, and what legacies you want to pass down to your kids and generation on. Don't be like, yeah, I was the IT guy, I fixed things when they broke, and you know, I was in the server room and so forth. So you want to have built a very well-rounded role and maybe lead on to other initiatives. So that's my advice. Take some time and effort to have your own well-rounded career roadmap for yourselves.
Well, very good advice. I might take that on board myself. I know I never spend enough time on that. I'm always too busy, but it's really important to do that. Yeah. Cheryl.
I think Gagan has said everything I also wanted to say. And maybe there's one thing I want to add is just start using it. Start using Azure, start using Office 365 and just see how you like it. To me, once I started using it, I was hooked. So yeah, that's I think the only thing I want to add.
Just get going.
I
like it. Nathan,
let's do it.
I came from a relatively large department, about 100 plus IT folks. And like I said before, we were kind of pigeonholed into slots. You know, we had the core IT, we had programmers, and we had a help desk. So I would say don't, you know, break that mold, you know, from your peers. Don't be afraid. And like Cheryl said, just do it, you know. You will get noticed, and you will have so many more opportunities than you ever imagined. And these new websites will definitely help you out. You don't have to scratch your head and figure out where to go and how to get it. It's kind of there for you, so definitely take advantage of it.
Yeah, and actually, maybe if I stay with Nathan on this one. So Nathan's experience was interesting in the sense that he moved from the IT department to the accounting department, right?
Yeah.
To help drive the cloud initiative. And the IT guys didn't really want to help a whole lot, right?
Right, yeah.
And so you were there leading the charge.
Right.
Yeah. And then let's talk about Career Impact. Like, what happened at the end of that project?
Well, now that I've spent a couple years, year and a half or so, with the finance department who drove this project, my peers now are basically looking at me as kind of a go-to guy, and it's giving me more opportunities to do things within the IT department. And then this way, I can work with other lines of businesses. So like I said, interpersonal skills, learn them, use them, don't be afraid. And you know, if your IT department isn't willing to go that route, I'm sure your lines of businesses are definitely willing to go that route, because just the, you know, we would do normal projects would take anywhere from 4 to 6 months to get just off the ground, doing all the traditional procurement, management sign-offs. Now we can spin something up in a few weeks, and like I think Scott mentioned, you know, and Rick too, is, you know, you can get kind of pigeonholed, you know, you put blinders on when you're working on servers and you can just kind of spend weeks doing it. Now, if I spend a day, that's too long. I mean, I can just really kill, I mean, other than the scripts, I mean, I can kill off and rebuild it in a few hours and be back up and running. Same thing with like a test environment. So that's kind of where I would.
Very cool. And what about career on your side, Cheryl?
Well, me being knowledgeable in the cloud area has actually enabled me to join a global initiative we have. I work at Capgemini, and we have a cloud choice initiative, which is global, and all the architects from all the different other cloud computing platforms, so AWS and others, a team of architects, and I'm actually one of those architects. So I'm able to actually develop myself further, so getting more knowledge about other cloud computing platforms, but also talking to different types of people. So I'm not talking to execs, it's at an international level, and I'm able to develop the technology, the portfolio I want to develop, which is, well, I'm a Microsoft consultant, so I want to be busy with developing that. And I'm actually able to do that because of me making the transition from a more traditional role to this cloud-focused role. So I'm very happy with that because, yeah, it means that my star is rising. Is that probably, mm-hmm. Yeah, within my company, because it's made me more visible as it's a global initiative. So. Very happy. That's very cool. Congrats.
And
Gagan? For career impact, so for me, there was transcended to a lot of levels. I mean, we've all heard the saying, you know, knowledge is power, but to the new age is collaboration and network is even powerful. You have to learn not only from your peers and experts, but from your competition. You know, if you can't beat them, join them, but there's a lot of resources out there, a lot of tools, and cloud computing has made it much more easier and susceptible to adapt to new things and new environments instead of the legacy adage, you know, spending tremendous amount of time and effort. Now you can do multiple of, you know, bundled of tasks in a matter of minutes and clicking a few buttons instead of long, lengthy scripts and processes. So career impact, you end up doing like architect level, being a head lead designer, you have so much ownership, so much opportunities given at hand, and so much well-rounded respect You know, so IT people used to be like in stick in a corner. They're like you know, Rick was saying, you know, introvert, extrovert, or introvert. But now you're like not only the go-to guy, but you're well-rounded, well-respected among your peers, competitors, executives. You have so much more to give and offer. And I think networking is key, collaboration, knowledge, surrounding yourself with smart people, even if it's not with some, you know, mundane or dumb people, it's not bad either, but you can have them educated too. So it's a give and take relationship. And I think with your career, you have so much more to offer.
Great, thank you. All right, who's gonna be brave? That was the end of my formal stuff. Does anyone have a question from the audience that they'd like to volunteer? If so, there is a microphone there and a microphone there. Don't be shy, thank you. Go ahead, sir.
All right. Oh, that's a lot than I thought. So hi, my name is Tim. I'm a sysadmin. And in our current business model, there's a big push towards specialization. You know, learn a thing, learn it really, really deep, and be the guy for that service for whatever it is. And I hear you guys talking a lot about, like, don't pigeonhole yourself, that kind of thing. So how would you navigate that that scenario?
Good question. So I'm going to get Rick to answer, but I'm going to frame it first. When I think about the cloud roles, firstly, you guys are valued because you have tremendous depth and technical knowledge that other people do not have. That doesn't go away. I do think that the breadth of technical knowledge you have is higher in the cloud roles because some of the things that you do today are not things you need to do tomorrow. The hardware pieces, the deployment pieces, and the physical sense go away and get replaced by more service management. And I think in a services world, you can be an expert across, from an IT perspective, a broader set of services as a service manager than you can be in an on-prem world in terms of having to be very, very deep in a single area. So I think, yes, you will need to have an ongoing specialty and domain knowledge that no one else has. But I also think at the same time, as a service manager, you can span a broader set of services in the cloud world at that level of depth because some of those functions are not things that you need to worry about anymore. You can concentrate on high-level services. But I'll let Rick add to that.
The typical consulting answer is it depends. I need to know more about the business that you're actually doing. But an area of technology that's very hot and big right now with business continuity is things like container services, as an example. Container services is an area where you could go into a lot of depth in architecture and understand how it works, where it goes, and how your businesses can use it. But it also transcends bigger than just that one area of container services because it applies to your app dev cycle, it applies to DevOps and continuous integration and continuous changes, and also scale as well. So specialties are always there. Mm-hmm. As Scott mentioned, you're going to continue with the broad knowledge across the platform. That's where I found a lot of payback for my time investments that I've made is to be able to have a broad knowledge. My specialty that I chose was to go one that's near and dear to my heart, which is on infrastructure, but I expanded that to include things like containers, like scale sets, and other business continuity type pieces as well.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. Go ahead.
Hi, my name's Chance. I'm an infrastructure manager. First, I'd like to say thank you to the panel. I know how hard what you're doing is because this is hard for me. My question is, in a lot of cases, IT is viewed as an expense. It's not viewed as bringing value to the business. It doesn't create revenue. I mean, you know, kind of an old school mentality. So we've been an early adopter of cloud. Microsoft has come in and touted, you know, it's cheaper, faster, quicker. A great example of what happened is we moved from on-prem Exchange 2010 to Office 365. Because it's cheaper, because it's easier, you don't need an Exchange admin. So we no longer had an Exchange admin. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot that you have to manage within Office 365. It seems like that was overlooked. And so we find ourselves having to scramble now and figure out, all right, who can handle this? And so, you know, my question is, how do you manage that mentality? Because I find that the marketing people from Microsoft, I'm sorry, not trying to put you on the spot.
No,
marketing people from Microsoft are trying to sell, the salespeople. Mm-hmm. And so they sell it in a way that has an ROI. but it sometimes overlooks the fact that what you guys are saying is you have to understand this, you have to manage this, you have to be able to do this. So how do we get those two things together? I mean, how did you guys do that within your own organizations to make them understand, yeah, it's cheaper, it's easier, it's faster, but we still have to have the resources?
Okay, I'm gonna hand it to the panel in a second. I'm just gonna address one from a global level because your comment on Office 365 to Exchange is an interesting one for me. And you're right that it is. There's no silver bullet that just everything works, and you know you don't need any backend help on it for sure. And if it's being marketed that way, then you know shame on us. In terms of Office 365 to Exchange specifically, we actually did a bunch of research. My manager's Julia White. Everyone saw her in the keynote, I imagine. She was running Office for a long period of time before she came over to our team about 6 months ago. And one of the pieces of research her team did was, like, what happened to the people who were the Exchange admins at some level? Did they lose their jobs? Or are they doing new and better things? And they're doing new and better things. They're not in places of losing their jobs in 99% of the case. They have jobs that are more fulfilling, that have more higher level things that they do than they did when they were Exchange admins, but they still have jobs. And those jobs may have Office 365 admin components in it for sure. And so we have seen, even in that space, where I think people thought, oh, the Exchange admin is going to, well, okay, the role is declining for sure. But that person's skill set gets applied, given that they make the transition to Office 365 admin, and there's more work they're doing with the business, and so on and so on. So you're right, that's important. In terms of how do you make sure that case is made clearly to management, and how do you land it, I'll pass it back. Does anyone want to volunteer? Or yep, Nathan, go ahead.
So, and I'm going to actually comment, if you don't mind, for the previous
right
gentleman
ahead
as well, who commented about pigeonholes. Like I said, I came from a large IT department, had 100 employees, and we had teams that were just basically designated to certain tasks. But when you go into the cloud, you kind of have to become a generalist because there's so many different pieces that you have to learn or know on how to do before you can set up an environment. So you can't really be, you gotta get your mindset out of being in that pigeonholed environment. You can go back into, like Rick said, after you've gotten the basic knowledge and then pick something that you wanna do because there's enough.
Yeah.
I mean, it's huge and you can't really know everything. So, but you need to do that when you begin, and then you can move into something that you know, you want to go towards. And then towards your question there was, you know, in my company, we had an Exchange admin, we had several of them. And we also had IT, network infrastructure guys, which is where I came from. So the way I look at it is it's cheaper, easier, and more reliable. But the Exchange admin doesn't go away because there's so many new responsibilities that Exchange or Office 365 gives you, that if you lose that resource, your poor network guy is going to be lost. So it's definitely not a employee reducing function at all, I don't believe. It's more of, like Scott said, that Exchange admin is going to get new responsibilities and learn new things that, because he no longer has to worry about if the, you know, you get blacklisted, if the server crashes, that's all gone. You know, now you're just focusing on, you know, the management level of things.
And then you can improve your core competencies. You're learning new skills, so don't think you're going to be obsolete. You're actually going to be more evolved. There's going to be new opportunities to improve on your skills and expand on your resume.
Yeah, and if maybe I add to it, I think one of the challenges is there is not a industry vernacular for what these new roles are yet. And so that's one of the reasons why we built the IT Pro Career Center. Because if your manager knew you needed cloud administrators and cloud architects and the set of roles and skills that they had were X and Y, then you can go to them and say, hey, look, we need these, and this is the new world. And yeah, the old role used to be a sysadmin, and the new role is a cloud administrator, but guess what? I had a resource here, and I need a resource here. So we're working to help that with the vernacular.
So a suggestion, this is bottom up.
Yeah.
My suggestion where our problem was is we need it top down.
Gotcha.
We need the CIO to understand that these jobs are changing, not going away.
Okay.
And that was our struggle, is managing that perception. And it may be unique to our situation because we were early and that there was still, like you said, the vernacular. But that's what I would love to see as well. Not just a bottom up, but a top down that looks at it from this same type of viewpoint.
Okay. No, that's good feedback. And we've heard that request before, and we will get to it.
Okay.
Thank you. It was great feedback. I really appreciate you. Any more victims slash volunteers? Thank you, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is David. I'm the director of IT, and I had a question more circled around getting practical experience. Mm-hmm. And this is an environment where your organization is really not comfortable with cloud, putting their resources and information in the cloud. But on the same token, as we spoke today, we need to get experience. And again, definitely appreciate the training and the new community that you're coming out with. But what would be your recommendations that we could take on in terms of developing those habits and that real world experience, you know, in our daily activities?
Yeah, it's a great question, David. So I have some stats, but I don't have them at my fingertips, but I'm gonna answer it by going sideways for a minute. We recently completed some research with millennials, which you can find posted somewhere if Teresa can find it for me. And one of the things that we found is the millennial generation, if you don't give them what they want, they go find other jobs. And so part of my answer is that I'm kind of tongue-in-cheek, but recognizing that there's a whole generation of people like that, is go to a place that will let you do that. Like, there is fundamentally a generation of people who are growing through the workforce right now. 25% of the workforce right now will be 75% in 4 or 5 years' time, who are not well responding to the, hey, I can't try new things, I want to innovate approach. So, you know, that's a message back to your management in terms of attracting new resources, and the needs of millennials and the needs to meet them are frankly giving them the technologies that they expect to move further forward. If you're constrained in a place where you just aren't able to innovate in your day job, then other than finding a new job, which was, I know, a bit tongue-in-cheek, obviously there's the work at home options, but ideally you can come in with, as you know, Gagan did, and not saying he was constrained, but you can come in with, here's a great idea on, you can develop the expertise potentially at home, and then come into work with, here's a great idea based on my expertise of doing X. Here's a relatively safe pilot project that doesn't have a significant risk to the business, that will enable us to develop and test in the cloud or something that's relatively commodity-wise to get people beyond any of the challenges they might have on data or security, which are the typical ones. We've typically found out that once people get hands-on, they feel far more comfortable with data and security, which are the two common issues, than if they've never touched it. And so getting that first pilot project, recognizing you won't pick the most strategic, you know, credit card in the cloud project as your first project, is a critical way in. So there was a broad answer. Does that help address?
Oh, definitely.
I'll let you add. Just hang on, David, go for it, and then we'll add on.
Because I think you have kind of an adoption problem. So the people trying to adopt the cloud, most of the time they're reluctant because they don't necessarily see the benefits, but they see all the negative things they've created in their mind about it. So I think you first need to address that to really show them how they can benefit from transitioning to a more cloud-centered role. So that's really the practical
approach.
Because, well, if I look at myself, I really want to experience something before. There's a lot of marketing, and yeah, it's great, and it's fast, and it's easy, and okay, yeah, that can. I know, don't necessarily believe that right away. So, I want to experience it myself, and a lot of other people in IT are the same. So, if you can get them to have kind of a pilot project, or at least get them to experience working with cloud technology, because they're IT people, so they're fond of technology, and yeah, that's the approach I would choose for this type of group. Does that make sense?
Sure, definitely. Yeah? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Okay, with that, I think we'll close. We'll be up here for a little while if you want to come up. Thank our panelists for being brave, and thank you, folks. Cheers.